according to St. Luke, the 24th chapter. On the first day of the week, at early dawn, they came to the tomb, taking the spices that they had prepared. They found the stone rolled away from the tomb, but when they went in, they did not find the body. While they were perplexed about this, suddenly two men in dazzling clothes stood beside them. The women were terrified and bowed their faces to the ground, but the men said to them, "Why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here, but has risen. Remember how he told you, while he was still in Galilee, that the Son of Man must be handed over to sinners and be crucified, and on the third day rise again." Then they remembered his words, and returning from the tomb, they told all this to the 11 and to all the rest. Now it was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and the other women with them who told this to the apostles. But these words seemed to them an idle tale, and they did not believe them. But Peter got up and ran to the tomb, stooping and looking in. He saw the linen cloths by themselves. Then he went home amazed at what had happened. The Gospel of the Lord. The man believed he was dead, which was odd because he would walk around like any normal person. He would breathe the way any normal person was breathing. His heart would beat like any person, but he believed that he was dead. So tells the story by Rabbi Edwin Friedman in his book, Friedman's Fables, The Man Who Believed He Was Dead. Well, needless to say, the friends and family of this man were deeply concerned about his belief that he was dead. But no matter how often and how hard they tried to convince him that he was alive, he wouldn't change his mind. So they decided to bring in the professionals. They started with a psychologist, and the psychologist took him into a separate room, and the family and friends were gathered outside the closed door, and they heard the sound of a voice getting louder and louder. It wasn't the voice of the man who believed he was dead. It was the voice of the psychologist, and it sounded more and more frantic as he talked to this man. And finally, the door was flung open. The psychologist came out. His tie was undone. His shirt was ripped open. He had sweat on his brow. He said, "I can't do anything with this guy. He needs to be institutionalized." Family and friends, they wouldn't do that. So they decided that the solution will be to bring in a pastor. Because after all, pastors can solve any problem that exists. They're laughing. Why are they laughing? I don't know. I brought in the local evangelist, you know, the kind of guy that has the perfect fitted suit and the hair that's all sort of slicked back. Obviously, this wasn't me that came in at this point. Went behind closed doors again, and once again, they heard the voice raising. It wasn't the man who believed it was dead. It was the pastor. And finally, the door flings open again, and the pastor comes out, hair all out of order, tie undone. He said, "I can't help this man. There's nothing to do to be able to save him from this. He says, I got to get to my evangelistic revival and go save some souls that I know I can save. So, there's one last option the family has. They call the local doctor. Local doctor is known for being a very wise and calm and practical man. And he shows up and he spends some time with the man who believes he's dead. And finally, he asks the man this question: do dead people bleed? Of course not. Dead people don't bleed. He said, well, I would like to do something. I would like to make a small cut on your arm. And if you bleed, then you'll know you're alive. If you don't, then it will prove that you're dead. Well, it was some trepidation, but the man agreed to that. The doctor sterilized his scalpel, made a small cut, and sure enough, the man started to bleed. The doctor quickly put some ointment on it and put a Band-Aid on it. And the rest of the family, they're like, oh. And the man finally says, I've changed my mind. Dead people do bleed. We get stuck being dead. We are stuck being dead. And no matter how anyone tries to convince us that we are alive, we're stuck being dead. What does that deadness look like? In the Gospel of Luke, that deadness looks sort of like good people who have a problem with certain other groups of people. You have these good people who take care of the sick and care for those who are in need and offer consolation to those who are grieving, but for whatever reason, they've identified small groups of people that they consider undeserving of God's love and mercy. And since they decided that they are undeserving of God's love and mercy, they show no justice to these people. It seems an odd thing because the commandment among God's people is that you should love all people. So how do they get around that? What's the loophole they use? The loophole that they use is this: that if a person is as they perceive to be immoral, then they don't have to be loved. What a great strategy. You find someone you don't want to love. You identify where you think that person is immoral, and that way you can create distance from that person. People of Luke's day are not much different than people of this day because we do the same things. We identify those people and those groups of people that we have a problem with, and we justify not showing love or justice to them because there's something morally wrong with them. What we overlook is that perhaps the problem with that person is not lying within them. The problem is lying within us, and we won't change. That's what death looks like. In my kitchen at home, we have beams on the ceiling, and there are a number of beams that go around the kitchen island, and we have nails in the beams, and we hang a lot of our pots and pans around on that beam. And on one corner of the beams of the kitchen island, we have this large wok that hangs down, and I'm always hitting my head on this wok. It seems like when I'm getting the dog food out of the dog food container to feed the dog, I hit my head on the wok and I get mad at the dog for wanting to be fed because I hit my head on the wok. And my son needs a paper signed for school, and I'm there leaning over the counter signing the paper, and I go to get back up, and I hit my head on the walk, and I get mad at my son in the school for requiring that paperwork to be signed. I'm working on dinner, and my wife calls my name, or my son calls my name, and I look up, and I hit my head on the walk once again, and I get mad at my wife for not doing enough and making me cook all the meals. My wife has said, "Why don't we move the walk?" You know what I've said? "No, I like it there." We get stuck, and we won't change even when it's causing a problem. That's what living dead is like. In the Gospel of Luke, salvation is expressed as forgiveness. We see that in Jesus' death on the cross, that one of the criminals hanging there with Jesus says, "Jesus, remember me when you get into your kingdom." And Jesus looks at him in love and says, "Today you're going to be with me in paradise." That Jesus has forgiven this criminal, someone who has done wrong, someone who's a sinner, someone who has broken. Jesus has forgiven him and promises him entrance into the kingdom of God. That cross is about forgiveness of those who have done something wrong. But the story of the crucifixion starts with something else, that when the good people, the ones doing all of the right things but had a problem with certain people, when they had commanded that Jesus be crucified, when he's being hung on the cross, Jesus says this about them, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they are doing." That even those who are convinced that they are right are going to be forgiven. That God does something to them as well. Right as I ended college, I worked for an after-school program. And there was one day when the children were out playing in the playground, and I heard one little boy crying and calling for me, and I went over, and little Jonathan, about 5 years old, was sitting at the bottom of the sliding board, and as he's sitting there, the other kids were coming down the sliding board and kicking him as they went down the sliding board, because when you sit at the bottom of the sliding board, that's what happens. And he calls to me, he says, "Make them stop kicking me whenever they come down the sliding board." And I said, "Well, you know, you are sitting at the bottom of the sliding board. You're probably going to get kicked because you are there." I said, "It seems to me you have two choices. You can either get up and move, or you can sit there and continue to be kicked." And he said, "I don't like either one of those choices. But we will be moved. We will be moved by the power of God." That God's forgiveness is what moves us off the spot and changes us into a person who is alive. Sort of equate it to this. In the parish I served in Ohio, we had a wooden cross like this, but it was like right up front, right in front of where the acolyte sat. And one Easter Sunday, one of the acolytes, not paying attention when he went to stand up for the last hymn, came up underneath the cross and nailed the back of his head on the cross. It stunned him. The cross does that to us. Because the God in whom we believe is a God who is merciful. The God who dies on the cross is the God who was raised from the dead, and God's forgiveness and mercy is now a universal claim for all people, for all time. I believe that the resurrection is a fact, that Jesus was raised from the dead. And because I believe that the resurrection is a fact, that Jesus was raised from the dead, I also then believe that those that I have loved dearly, that I have lost to death, they will be raised from the dead. And I will see them again at the resurrection of the dead. never to be separated again. I believe that to be the truth. I want you to believe the same thing, the power of the resurrection from the dead. As I believe that the resurrection is a fact and that Jesus is raised from the dead, I believe in the power of forgiveness. And Lord knows I need that forgiveness day in and day out. What other people can do to me to find fault with me never can equate to the fault and the guilt I can find in myself. I need the power of God's mercy and forgiveness. But with that power of God's mercy and forgiveness, it also reminds us that there is no person that is seen as undesirable in God's eyes, no matter who they are and what they have done. No person is an abomination to God. They're all people loved by God. Believing the resurrection to be fact, I believe in the power of the truth, because sometimes the truth needs to be spoken, but it's a truth that needs to be tempered with love. So many times we love to speak the truth because we know it will hurt someone. If you don't believe that, look at the nasty emails you've written over the past. Look at the letters you've written to people who've made you mad. Look at your social media posts. Think about the times when you've been angry with someone. We love the power of the truth when it hurts someone. No, the power of the truth needs to be tempered by the truth being spoken in love for the well-being of the other person. And as the resurrection is fact, it is my belief that everything we say, every decision we make, every policy we adopt, every law that's put in place must be about that which is life-giving, that which gives life. But we will fall drastically short of these possibilities. And we will wonder whether there is good ever possible. But know this, that through the power of the resurrection, this world, this creation is always moving towards new life, to the day when all will be set right. All that is broken will be healed, and all that is dead will be brought back to life. So on this Easter Sunday, I invite you to believe in the power of the resurrection. Be someone to, instead of being someone who is living as if they are dead, be someone who had been dead, but now is alive. Amen.